Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? I'm sitting here on Thursday night. It's Valentine's night. And I'm sitting here recording just after the game has finished. Bate Borisov 1, Arsenal 0. I'm trying to think of a Valentine's Day comparison to what we got tonight. And maybe it's Unai Emery coming home with a bunch of petrol station flowers. The very last bunch, actually, of petrol station flowers. The sort of bunch that even the most desperate man on his way home with nothing for his other half on Valentine's night looked at them and went, nah, nothing is better than that. It would be better for me, even though it will be bad, to bring home nothing rather than that bunch of flowers. But that bunch of flowers is what we got from Unai Emery and his team in Belarus tonight. I mean, where do you even start? Are the missed chances that we should have taken, which would have put us in control of the game, are they the worst thing? Is the fact that we can't defend, is that the worst thing? Is it that we had 45 minutes, an entire half, to change the dynamic of the game and all we seemed to do was confuse the players? Was that the worst thing? The fact we didn't really create any chances? The fact that we lost against a team that haven't played a game of football in 2 months? Is that the worst thing? Or is all of it just together the worst thing? I don't know. What I do know, though, is that it was bad. And I don't know what Unai Emery is trying to do with this team, apart from getting Alex Iwobi to put Kolasinac in on the overlap. The Kolasinac overlap. That's what we've got from an attacking point of view. The Kolasilap. That's it. That's as much as we've got. I thought it was weird, frankly, that given that Kolasinac, okay, he was at fault for the goal because we know he's not a very good defender, but he does give you something in the final third. When he was, for whatever it was, 66 or 70 minutes, basically our only attacking threat, or the area from which attacks came, we took him off and put on Denis Suarez, who looks like, I know he's short of fitness and all that kind of stuff, but did you ever have, like, a game of football with your mates when you were kids, and one of the lads had to bring his younger brother with him, and everyone's like, ah, what'd you bring him for? And he's like, oh, my mom said I had to bring him. I don't have any choice. Can we let him play? And everyone's like, ah, god damn, yeah, okay, he can play, but, like, we're 12, like, you know, we're 12. And he's only 8. It's going to be absolutely shit if he plays. And he plays and it's shit because you're all much bigger than him. And he tries. He's like plucky little guy. But basically you're all 4 years older than him. And he's tiny and you just, you know, bump him off. And it's awful. And that's what Denis Suarez was. And it was, I think, a real blot on Unai Emery's copybook, this result. I really do. That kind of approach, that kind of team selection, not good. And let's remember that we went to Bate Borisov last season with a team who you could say weren't any better, or perhaps maybe you might say were worse than the team we had out last night, and they got themselves 4-0 up. They won 4-2 in the end because we conceded a couple of late goals, but basically they scored 4 because Bate, Borisov are shit. And they haven't played for 2 months. And we lost to them. And that's bad. So I think, to try and get some more structured thoughts on this, I might as well go straight in to our guest on the show this week to discuss the 1-0 defeat to Bate Borisov in the Europa League. Tim Stillman, hello to you.
Hello. That's the most depressing sentence I think I've ever heard.
I hope you have a stiff drink, do you? I wasn't going to have a drink this evening, but I've got a stiff one in front of me now.
Just water.
Just water. Okay, you're a braver man than I am. I have to say, Tim, I was expecting to talk to you about a fairly routine Arsenal win, which wouldn't take us too long, because what can you say about a win over a team as poor as Bate Borisov? And I had other things that we were going to talk about, which we might do, but we probably won't, because I think there's much more to unpack tonight. Yeah. Because of this defeat. Maybe I'm an idiot, or maybe I'm just hopelessly optimistic, but I really was not expecting that tonight.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely the same. Do you know what I was expecting? I was expecting to win maybe 2 or 3 nil and maybe have the debate about how well we played.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit like the Huddersfield game, you know, the kind of, well, we deserve to win, yeah, but how good was it really?
Mm.
I wasn't expecting it to be, yeah, that was just objectively bad.
Yeah, I've just done a little intro to the podcast there, and that was bad is something that popped up a couple of times in what I said. And just to sort of put the result in context, last season we went to Bate Borisov in the Europa League, in the group stages. Not that I think it makes any great difference, to be honest. And actually, we played them at a time when their league season was underway. It's worth pointing out that Bate Borisov have not played a competitive game of football for 2 months. They're in their preseason training right now. And the team that we put out that night was Ospina, Mertesacker, Holding, Mustafi, Wilshire, Maitland-Niles, Elneny, Willock, Giroud, Walcott, and Nelson. And that team was 4-0 up. Well, it wasn't, no. It was 4-1 up, actually. I made a mistake there. But it was, we scored 4 goals and they got a couple back. I think on paper, that team from last season is a worse team than the one we saw last night. So it raises some big questions.
Yeah, it really does. And for all of the kind of the holes in the Arsenal squad and, you know, the question of balance and things like that, and the pitch, and whether we should play with 3 centre halves, and whether, you know, everyone's all of a sudden a defensive midfielder, according to some people, we're better than that. Like, we're better than that. Like, nobody's under the illusion that this is like a world class squad waiting to break out, but we're a lot better than that. And what's quite odd at the moment is we seem to have kind of reversed, where at the beginning of the season we had these really listless first halves, and then, you know, clicked into gear a little bit in the second half. That's maybe overstating it, but doing enough.
Yeah.
And now actually what we're doing is we're starting games fairly brightly and then just completely like losing the plot and just descending into this kind of mess. And it's really, really worrying, because there's quite a lot going on there, I think, with the confidence of the players, clearly. And actually, for all the, you know, like, our sole tactic at the moment seems to be, let's try and get Kolasinac on the overlap.
Mm.
It's actually a fairly effective tactic. Like, I know it's kind of boring because it seems to be the only thing we've got, but it's actually quite effective. It actually works quite a lot. And so the one kind of thing you can identify that seems to be have been worked on actually works quite well, which begs the question about what else are we working on? Like, what else are we trying to do? And, you know, this question of we've asked a lot, particularly in the opening months of, you know, Emery's reign, like, do we see where this is going? Do we see a style and all of that? And that's important for us as fans. But the more pertinent question is, do the players see a style? Because they get more information than we do on the training ground. And it's like, do they see a plan? Do they see a style? Do they buy in? Is there something to buy into? Because the little alarm bell I've had in the back of my head all season is, I don't really listen to Emery's press conferences anymore because I just don't understand what he's saying. And I don't think that's a linguistic thing. I don't think his English is good. It's not because I can't understand his zany Spanish accent or anything.
Objectively, it's not bad, there's still some learning. He can express himself fairly well. I mean, I think that's a point I want to come to you about the players and what they think of what's going on, or what we might think the players are thinking of what's going on. But, when you think about it, I'm going to come to the team selection now in a minute as well, but the Kolasinac overlap thing, it is effective. But I wonder, how it is that a team like Arsenal has become so dependent on this one thing for almost all of its creative outlet. I mean, people now are listening to this screaming, well, there's a pretty good creative midfield player we have in our squad who wasn't in the team and wasn't in the squad to travel, and I hear that. But there were two chances in the early stages of the game, which I think we should have scored. Mkhitaryan should have scored in the opening couple of minutes. A great ball from Iwobi to set Kolasinac free. It's a good cross, and I think Mkhitaryan should score from there. Lacazette with a header at the back post from a Kolasinac cross. And, you've said it countless times about how important the first goal is in games. Yeah. I'm not trying to make any excuses or suggest that there's mitigation for this, but the chances were there, and had they gone in, I think we'd have been looking at a different night, but they didn't, and that is that leaves you open to your other weaknesses being exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. It was kind of like a diseconomies of scale in that, we don't look particularly confident at the moment, and, we started okay, and if one of those chances goes in, I think we're talking about something very, very different. But then obviously Barthez get a goal off of a set piece that gives them something to defend, and all of a sudden, you look at that chance in the first minute for Mkhitaryan, and there's oceans of space for Iwobi to play the ball. Kolasinac runs into oceans of space. Mkhitaryan's unmarked in the 6-yard box. Barthez didn't really start the game with 10 defenders in their potato farm box, just with lumps kicked out of it. The game didn't start like that. It wasn't really until Barthez were the ones who grew into the game. And obviously we're not confident at the moment. And so when we went 1-0 down, all of our confidence kind of evaporated. The pitch got worse. I think the technical level of this team, and one of the problems at the moment is the technical level of this team is quite low. Mm. Even when we're not playing on cabbage patches, at Huddersfield last weekend, we had, Kolasinac is regularly passing under 60%. Maitland-Niles was at about 55% or 60% or it's somewhere in that region against Huddersfield. We give the ball away a lot. And when you look tonight, don't get me wrong, I don't think we'd be any worse with Ozil in the team. But even when Ozil was playing earlier in the season, he doesn't have many assists this season, and all of his chance created metrics are down. So there's something else a bit more widely going on. But when you look at the Barthez game, it's the creative hub of the team was Guendouzi, Iwobi, and Kolasinac, which, however you feel about all of those players individually or their potential or their ceiling, I mean, that's not an elite level creative force, really. That's asking a lot of some players who are either learning the game or who are just plain inconsistent. And then I think the other slightly technical issue we've got is that most of our attackers don't shoot very much. Even Lacazette and Aubameyang, they tend not to shoot unless it's absolutely just perfect for them to shoot. And I think this is quite outmoded way of attacking. If you look at the way some of our better competitors are attacking at the moment, Mane, Salah, they take tons of shots. Aguero, Sterling take loads of shots. Son, Kane, Eriksen, shoot. They're high volume shooters. And we've got, Aubameyang doesn't really shoot unless he's, 8 yards out. Ditto Lacazette. Iwobi doesn't really shoot, and when he does, he doesn't shoot very well. So we've got this this really bad combination of very little creativity and not a lot of kind of inspiration either.
Sure. I mean, do you feel that comes from the way that we end up playing the game? You know,
a bit.
It is. It's difficult to shoot when you don't have a good position to shoot from. But when you're playing the game in a way which allows the opposition to prevent you from creating space even to shoot, like as the game went on, I think Bate Borisov, they said, okay, we can sit back here and we can pretty much deal with everything that they've got because they don't have a little bit of guile, or they don't have the craft, they don't have that special player to open us up or to look for that pass. You know, if we can marshal Kolasinac as well as we can, chances are we're not going to be able to do that. So what happens is you get Lacazette dropping off, you get Lacazette dropping deep. We're going to talk about his sending off now in a few minutes' time. But, you know, even when Aubameyang came on, I'm looking at the team and I'm thinking, well, what are we playing here? What are we trying to do? Because we'd brought Aubameyang and Torreira on, and we'd gone to a back four, and then within 4 or 5 minutes, we took Kolasinac off, which meant we were playing without a left back, and we put Suarez sort of out there, and we'd gone to, I guess, to a back three again. So we changed formation, then changed formation again. And I'm looking at Lacazette on the left wing, and I'm looking at Aubameyang on the right wing, and I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on here? Because, you know, you've got two really good strikers, and you're asking them to do, I assume they're doing what they're asked to do, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I don't understand what it is, and I don't think this comes back to the point you made earlier on. I don't think they understand what it is exactly they're supposed to be doing.
No, exactly. And the thing is with this kind of one Kolasinac tactic that, you know, is reasonably effective, it's still very eye of the needle, you know. How many passes went out of play, you know, trying to play Kolasinac in, because that pass has to be perfect. And then when he gets there, the cutback has to be perfect. It's all very, it's a very kind of Goldilocks move, you know?
Yep.
And so what ends up happening is, we get in behind a lot, and then there are lots of cutbacks, and most of them get cleared, quite frankly, or most of them go to a player who can't quite get a shot off. It all has to be like inch perfect, and like I said, I don't think the technical level of the team is quite high enough to do that on a regular basis. And the rest of it's such a muddle, really. It's a real muddle, and that's you know, in the long term, it's difficult. Like, you can't, I always expected this season to be very up and down in terms of results. I expected us to be quite inconsistent, but I expected that to happen because I thought, well, what will probably happen is we'll settle into a style and then we won't quite have the players for it. So sometimes it will come off and sometimes it won't. But, you know, the worry we've had all season, really, even during the unbeaten run, is that there just doesn't really seem to be a style. And, you know, for everything, for all the angst that causes us as fans, that causes a far bigger problem for players if they're, you know, if they're training every day and they're getting all of this information and they can't really seem to make head nor tail of it. And it looks, it does look to me like something is a bit more fundamentally broken than, you know, oh, if we play Ozil, he'll create loads of chances.
Yeah.
Like I say, I don't think we'll be any worse with him there at the moment. But I think something is a bit more fundamentally broken than that. And what's really kind of got to me the last couple of months, and I really noticed this at West Ham as well, was I thought at the beginning of the season, at the very least, some of the fundamentals were being observed a little bit better. So I thought, okay, they are working harder. There's far less like walking when we're being counter-attacked and stuff like that. I thought at least the effort and the energy levels have gone up, which is, it was a fairly low bar on last season and a quick win for the manager to get that right. But the last couple of months, that seems to have really reverted. And, you know, watching players, you know, walk while we're being counter-attacked, the ball comes into our box. And, you know, for me, Kolasinac, on that goal. You know, Monreal with a really lazy foul, just sticking a leg out when he absolutely doesn't have to. And then the ball coming into the box and Kolasinac attacking it with all the zest of, you know, the way I send an email at 5 to 5 on a Friday afternoon in the office. It's like absolutely no conviction in it at all. And it's
worrying, you know, isn't it? Because it makes you think that they're, not that they're switched off per se, but the messages that we assume that are being given to them on the training ground are not getting through. I mean, here's a remarkable stat. Arsenal have conceded 8 times in the 5 minutes before halftime this season, which is amazing. This is the first time it's happened outside the Premier League, and thanks to our friend at Opta Orbino for that information. But that is a fundamental, which is concentration and organisation and things which we assumed that when Unai Emery came in, these were the things that he was going to get right or he was going to improve on, because they were all over the place under Wenger as well. But when you're coming into a club, surely those are the things that are kind of, I'm not going to say they're easy, but they're the easiest things to identify and the easiest things perhaps to put right. But over the course of the season, I'm not sure that we're seeing that improvement.
No, absolutely. And I think one of the things that might have changed, so not an awful lot has changed that much, to be honest, other than the results. There was a fair amount of fortune in that kind of unbeaten run earlier in the season. And, if you try and tot up in your head at the moment, Arsenal's genuinely good performances this season, I think you'd be using one hand with change left over, to be honest with you. So it's not changed that much. But I do think my read on it, I guess, is that he can't sort this defence out. And a lot of the kind of tinkering has been about, you know, because even when we were on the winning run, we were giving up so many chances. And we're quite fortunate, I think, that there are just lots of teams that don't have good strikers. I think if Cardiff or Huddersfield had any half-decent Premier League striker, we'd have been in big trouble in both those games. And I've felt that a few times this season. And I think he's thinking, like, Christ, how do I shore this up a bit? And I don't think he can. And I think sooner or later he might have to come to the realization that, you know what, like, this is a very top heavy squad and that's where my talent is. So I'm just going to have to lean into that. Not least because we've actually got a fairly decent run in winnable games, you know, other than, like, you know, there are some quite tough away games there, like Wolves, Leicester, those won't be easy, obviously Spurs, but particularly at home, we've got quite a good run, and I really think we'd be better off just leaning into that a bit more so that we're not going into games like this asking a kid who is playing in Ligue 2 last season, Alex Iwobi, and frankly, a failed left back as our only creative outlets. We've got to do better than that, and we've got the personnel to do it.
Yeah,
tonight, did we really need like 3 centre halves and to have Aubameyang and Suarez?
If you
on
could
the bench?
See my face right now, I'm like gesturing to the sky, and I know you're a bit more fond of the three at the back than I am, but you know, this felt to me like the sort of game that we could play a back four, because, you know, they're a poor team. They're in preseason. They haven't played for 2 months. We put 10 goals past them last season. You know, go there and be aggressive and be adventurous and attack them. And I think if we did that, I think the game would have perhaps gone in a different direction. And I looked at the lineup and I thought, okay, yeah, we can still win this. And we should still win this relatively comfortably. But a little bit of my heart sank when I saw a back three again. Because whatever about going to Tottenham away, as we will, you know, next month at Wembley, and we will play 3 at the back because that's just what he will do. going to Batey Borisov with a back three, and then, you know, I know our wing-backs are supposed to be attacking and adventurous, but, you know, the reality is we didn't need that extra man in the back. You know, we didn't need three central defenders to deal with the threat that they posed, which was essentially nothing apart from, you know, the set-piece goal that they scored. Having three, four centre-backs on the pitch is not going to make any real difference in that sense. So I wonder if we look at the players and we look at them and we think, okay, are they fully bought into what they're being asked to do? You know, does the conservatism help them perform or produce on nights like tonight when really we should have that game by the scruff of the neck, which we did in the early stages, but we should keep that game by the scruff of the neck. You know, they're a team. You know that thing when you were a kid and, like, you had your fucking uncle who would put his hand on your head and go on, he'd go, try and hit me, and you couldn't because, you know, he's just bigger and stronger and he can hold you off with no hassle at all. That's what we should have done footballistically to Batey Borisov. Instead, we played in a way or set up or approach the game in a way which meant that if we didn't take the chances that we created, which we didn't, all of a sudden you're sort of going, okay, right, shit, now what? And there's an element of that for the players, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think in general, I think he will go three at the back for most, if not all, of our away games. And I do see some sense in that in the Premier League, because I think he'll largely do it because he doesn't really trust either of his fullbacks, because one of them isn't a fullback in Kolasinac. Well,
the other isn't a fullback either, is he? Maitland-Niles is not a fullback either.
Exactly. So I think he'll go with the back three just because he feels, probably with some justification, that we're weak defending the wide areas. So I can kind of get on board with that. And if it means, like, having some continuity and, like, right, this is how we're playing away from home now. I can kind of see that. Tonight, no, I couldn't see that. And particularly, you know, and a guy who's won the Europa League three times maybe should appreciate this, the value of the away goal. So even if you concede one on the break because they lump one up the pitch and you get it wrong, I mean, if you score two, then you've put the tie out of sight, basically. So, you know, that with like the extra value of the away goal, that made it even less necessary, in my view, to kind of put three at the back, and not least because they were always just going to play those long balls, and with the way the pitch was, you know, it's not like the ball was going to go bouncing towards Petr Cech's goal, quite frankly. Every time they tried it, the ball just got stuck in a massive quagmire. Like, it's actually not a great pitch, ironically, for football.
And their striker had about as much pace as I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, exactly, he wasn't going to get away from whichever pair of centre-halves we wanted to play.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't threaten in that manner once at all, first half or second half. So, frankly, like, with some of our defenders, does it really matter having two or three of them?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
It's, you know, I was thinking to myself tonight, and I was like looking at, and a bit on Saturday as well, and I was just like, how is 33-year-old Lauren Koscielny, who's come back from this awful injury, still holding our defence together?
How is he
still, like, clearly our best defender? Yeah. It's just, it's ridiculous. Like,
and that's not a slight on Lauren Koscielny by any means. It's reflective of the quality of the defenders that we have.
Yeah, precisely. And it's like, you know, absolute, like, I thought he'd have a Per Mertesacker season where, you know, he'd barely play, if at all. And obviously, I think he probably played a bit more because of the injury situation. But now he's exactly where he was this time last year, which is an absolute automatic pick because he's our best defender, which, you know, really shouldn't be the case. Even given the injury, like, he's still 33, and he said he probably would have left last summer anyway had he not been injured. So we really shouldn't be at this stage where our like clearly our best defender is, you know, it probably in the last few months of his career at Arsenal, because I'm not sure he'll stay for next season he was going to go last summer. So, you know, it's all a bit mad. It's all a bit baffling, and it's just so hard to get your head around, really, because even given a lot of these flaws, as we said at the outset, we're much better than that. We have better players than that. Even freestyling with no manager at all, they should be able to go out there and beat Partey without too many problems.
I agree. I mean, I think nobody would dispute the fact that we need some better players. You know, there isn't an Arsenal fan in the world who would say that this squad does not need an improvement, an input of quality. But I also think that Unai Emery should be getting more out of the players that we have. And I've been quite happy to give him time and leeway and understanding, and his situation is difficult and his job is difficult. I fully accept that. Tonight is a game that sort of resonated with me, you know, where you're sort of trying to make up your mind about things and you're happy to give it a chance. And this one has cast some real doubt in my mind, because I agree with you. I think the players that we have should be able to go to Bate Borisov and win that game comfortably. And we didn't, and there's a lot to worry about from that regard, or from that point of view. So the Lacazette red card, you know, silly, and a player can get frustrated and he can lash out and everything else. But I do wonder if, you know, you think about the game against Huddersfield where there were passes that didn't come to him. And tonight, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, what's he doing there? What's he doing on the halfway line, you know, in a game where we're trying to fucking score a goal to get like a draw against fucking Bate Borisov, and he's on the halfway line scrapping for the ball? What the fuck is that about? I mean, how much of what's going on do you think has fed into that frustration, rather than it being just like a moment of madness in a game, which can happen? I don't think it's a moment of madness. I think like that's just sort of the straw that broke the camel's back a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree, because Lacazette is, he's not a combustible character, is he? He's
not
a guy that loses his temper a lot. And that felt like a real build up of frustration. And actually, as stupid as it was, and usually a player does something like that, I'd just say, well, you're an idiot, and to some extent that's still true, but I kind of have some sympathy with him, to be honest, because, you know, there's a couple of minutes to go and he's on the halfway line on the right wing because he can't get the ball, because we're so bad at trying to get the ball to him that he has to go all that way back to try and go and get it. And you know, you can see why he's pissed off. And in the second half, against Huddersfield on Saturday, loads of kind of counters broke down because, again, we just don't really have a lot of technical ability in the team at the moment. And, you know, lots of passes just not quite landing or being overhit. And, you know, he did cut a very frustrated figure in that second half, because he was working really, really hard and he was actually taking up some really good positions. But we barely had the ball down there under the pitch, and when we got it there, we couldn't get it to him. And it was the same tonight. And all right, he missed the chance he should have scored in the first half. I'm sure that plays into it. He had that goal ruled out for offside. I'm sure that plays into it a bit. He'll be coming away thinking, I really should have scored tonight, regardless of whatever's going on around me. So I'm sure all of that plays into it. But to me, you know, and he, when he was it over Christmas, he was subbed in a game, and you know, he looked, we've had a few players who've done that, like Lacazette and Aubameyang, where they've been subbed and their reaction has worried me a little bit. And you know, I perfectly take the point, the whole every player should be disappointed to be substituted, and that's kind of true, but I don't know, that just, I always worry about stuff like that. It reveals a deeper frustration, I think, anyway, or it makes me think that there's a deeper frustration. And you know, Lacazette's kind of lost his rag about being subbed fairly recently, and you know, and now he's kind of very uncharacteristically lashing out.
Yeah.
And that to me is not a great sign. And at the risk of bringing up possibly the most boring subject in the world, you've got to wonder as well how much like the whole Ozil thing plays into it. We don't know. What do the players think? Is Lacazette,
if you're Lacazette and you want to score goals, do you want a player in the team who is one of the biggest chance creators in European football? You know, or do you want, with all due respect to him, Matteo Guendouzi or Alex Iwobi? And I'm not slagging off those guys in any way, but just, you know, if you're a striker and you can you imagine what they're thinking at the start of this season? We've got Aubameyang, we've got Lacazette, and there's two strikers, and they're going to be penalty box players, and behind them we've got Mkhitaryan, we've got Ramsey, we've got Ozil, we've got Iwobi, you know, who can play a part as well. And all of a sudden, you're in a team where the only chances you're getting are coming from a left back bombing forward if Iwobi or somebody else can find him behind the opposition right fullback. It's got to be something that they regret, maybe is not the right word, but, you know, they're probably rueful about the way things have worked out, because, you know, when you envision a season at the start, certainly this was not what I was envisioning Arsenal playing like and being like at this point in the season.
No, absolutely. And as much as I personally, I just want the whole Ozil thing to end, and I do think there is something to be said for him going, really, not just because of quote unquote the situation, but I feel like the last remnants of Wenger-ishness need to be removed from the team, and I just don't think it's ever going to quite happen for Ozil in the way we want it to. But you know, on the other hand, that might not be how the players think about it at all. And again, we can only speculate, but I bet you when we bought Aubameyang and we bought Lacazette, I bet Ozil was a big selling point to both of them.
For sure.
Whether it was spoken about or not, it probably didn't need to be spoken about. They probably thought, yeah, I can play behind this guy. And, you know, it's one thing that they're not playing in front of that guy anymore, but when they're not playing in front of that guy and we're not really creating anything else, it does make you wonder. They might be completely behind it. They might hate Ozil. They might think he's a dick. They might want him to go. They might resent his wages. They might not think he worked. You know, they could be completely behind it. But, you know, it does make you wonder, because as well, they know him as a person, and he doesn't seem unpopular or anything. No. It's not like Sanchez last season, where you really got the impression that however good he was, people just hated his guts. I don't get that impression with Ozil. So, you know, it's one of those things, and such is the life of a manager. You make big calls. You know, you need the results. Like, good results fix everything. Like, you can do anything, really, as long as the results are good. But once they're not, you know, I wonder how much these things go through the players' minds. It must do.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Look, okay, let's move on from that. And I want to talk to you about a couple of other quick things. You sent out a tweet last night which said, since Gazidis left, Arsenal have withdrawn Ramsey's contract offer, insisted only loan signings can be made in January, and actively engaged in trying to dislodge their highest earner. Arsenal are in austerity mode. And I should just add a little something to that, in that we did a story on Arsblog News early in January, which told you that basically every department at Arsenal was sent an email to advise them to cut costs wherever possible, which is a worrying thing, whether you're a football club or a supermarket or whatever kind of business you are. If you get an email from on high from the boss saying, cut costs as much as possible, you go, uh-oh. I might start looking around and seeing what's going on here. But it's an interesting observation that Arsenal are in austerity mode, and we can perhaps rationalize it and think, okay, it's to get ourselves ready for the summer. It's because we want to invest properly in the summer. But what if this is what it is? There's also that kind of worries me a little bit.
Yeah, so some of the things I'm thinking about at the moment, so we got a guy like Raul Sanjay in, who huge name in the football world. We got Sven Mislintat in, huge name in the football world that everybody knows about, you know, the probably with Monchi, like the most famous recruiter in football, even though like this whole model is becoming very popular now. I'm not sure I could name too many other heads of recruitment throughout Europe. I don't know who does that for Real Madrid or Barcelona. I've got no idea. So, you know, some high profile guys who probably came in on big wages, and, you know, we got a new manager. So the thing that's going through my mind is, were they told that this was what's going to happen? I kind of think like the decision about Ramsey and about January, and, you know, trying to squeeze Ozil out. And I do maybe think that that's kind of Raul, because it's not what Gazidis would have done. It's not what Gazidis was doing. So that doesn't make me think that Stan Kroenke has said, right, you know, a year after signing off on this Ozil way, just gone, no, get rid of him. Like, I don't think Kroenke takes like an active enough role to do or say something like that per se. Maybe the email about cutting costs, that might have come from a Kroenke, but I do still think it's probably Raul who's driven those changes, because it is a departure from what was happening when Gazidis was here. But also, like with Emery, I didn't like the way, and I understand it from his point of view, but I didn't like the way he introduced that whole, oh, I've been told that I can only sign players on loan. There was a bit of tetchiness in the way he said it. I'm not sure the club really wanted it out there quite like that. Right at the beginning of the window, I'm sure they'd have preferred to have kept that a little bit private. And it seemed like a lot of his language became very, I'm being told, this is what they're telling me, as if to say,
it will be, it'll be different in the summer. They tell me it will be different in the summer.
Yeah, as if to say, I am not an active part of this decision. This is being imposed on me. And that had the alarm bells ringing a little bit. But it also made me wonder, like, do you reckon Unai Emery was told when he was hired, we bought all these players, you know, because you're not here yet and it makes a certain amount of sense for us to get guys in quickly. So, you know, this summer, we're pretty much giving you players to work with, which I'm sure he'd have thought, okay, that's fine. They might not all be the players I want, but I understand the situation for a bit of brevity. But do you reckon he was told last May, oh, and by the way, in January, we're not giving you any money?
No, I spoke to somebody and I don't, you know, I can't say with absolute assurance that this is the case, but somebody who I speak to relatively frequently who gives me good information, often good information, it's not always 100% accurate, but, you know, always in good faith, told me that they were told there'd be certainly more money than this.
Yeah.
More money last summer and more money, certainly money in January.
Yeah, exactly. And that, again, makes me think it's probably Raul who's the kingmaker here, because obviously it was Gazidis that, you know, did the hiring per se of Emery, and I'm sure Gazidis probably would have told him, yeah, there'll be money in January, there'll be money next summer, which might have been the case had he stayed. But and then obviously behind the scenes you've got the head of recruitment leaving after less than a year. I mean, it's not a pretty picture.
It's not healthy, is it?
No, quite frankly. And I don't know if you remember, I was on this podcast last summer, and I just had a slight reservation about getting like Raul Sanyehi and Sven Mislintat together at the time that Gazidis was leaving, because these are two guys who, again, I reiterate, they're famous, and they're famous because they want to be famous, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but they want their names out there, which means they are ambitious men.
Only one stag comes out on top, and the other guy goes away with his antlers between his legs or his whatever.
Yes, and there was a big power vacuum that was created, and then we bought these two big, ambitious guys. And I always had slight reservations about that, and, you know, about placing all your faith in, like, gurus and this guy will fix everything. I think there has to be a chemistry behind the scenes. I think that's the most important thing. But, you know, it's not really a healthy picture, so I'm not kind of doom mongering too much, which is not too much of a surprise, actually, when you have the sort of upheaval we've had on and off the pitch over the last couple of years. I think a lot of people criticise Man United, like, retrospectively, for how they handled the Ferguson departure, but I don't remember too many people complaining about what they did at the time, albeit they hired the wrong manager. But all the other kind of things they put in place, you know, people have mixed opinions about Ed Woodward, but he took on like a very definite almost like director of football role. They got some old guys in like Phil Neville and Ryan Giggs to try and continue this, and I don't remember too many people complaining about that at the time. In retrospect, it was all wrong, but actually the idea was fairly sound. It's really, really difficult to replace, you know, to completely change the culture of your organization overnight, and I always felt that would be the case with Arsenal. It's not even a good idea on paper. It's still going to be a bit rocky. But yeah, so in short, to sum up, the players don't look happy, the manager doesn't look happy, and it doesn't look happy behind the scenes. But other than that,
everything's okay.
Everything's great, yeah.
Well, look, I mean, I think it's fair also to say, and we should point this out, that, you know, what can seem like a desperate, awful situation in football can turn around quite quickly. You know, it is possible for things to change really quickly, especially if you win games on the pitch and the mood lightens a little bit and everyone gets a bit, you know, they're not quite as introspective. You know, the Moyes thing is quite interesting, isn't it? United sacked Moyes after, when did they sack him? March or April of that season?
Yeah.
You know, I know it's a different job and it's a different circumstance and it's everything else, but, you know, they were, I suppose, decisive in what they did. And, you know, I've sort of been of the opinion that it might not be the first guy that we get after Arsene Wenger who is the right man. It might be a number of people doing a number of things who lead us to getting the right man somewhere down the line. And I feel kind of that's what it's going to be. And I'm not saying that Unai Emery can't make a positive contribution or can't get us, you know, to a level where we want to be or somewhere closer to where we want to be. But, you know, I'm not sure that Unai Emery is a guy who's going to bring Arsenal to the title or anything like that. No. So,
and I don't think he was ever going to be. I have to say, I'm not sure in their heart of hearts the guys who hired him thought that either. I think they thought if he can get us into fourth or win us the Europa League, then he sets us up nicely for the next guy, effectively.
Well, look, you know, people can roll their eyes to heaven at this all they want, but, you know, let's not buy the spin that Unai Emery was the guy they wanted all along, because that's just not the case. It's absolutely not the case, despite what Gazeta said about, you know, whatever, what did he say? Those who know don't speak and those who speak don't know. Yeah. I mean, what a big load of buzzword bullshit that was, you know. And I get that people wanted to buy into the new manager. Of course, we all wanted to buy into the idea that this new guy was going to come in and do a great job. And I'm not saying that he can't still do a great job, but, you know, this was not this smooth, unanimous process that they sat down and dossiers this and all that fucking bullshit. I don't believe it for a second. I've lost my train of thought here because the Ivan Gazidis and his face has really annoyed me. I want to just do one thing before we go, because I wrote a piece during the week about Aaron Ramsey and about his departure, and it's been announced, of course, that he is going to Juventus, and he's going to earn a hell of a lot of money there, and best of luck to him. He's going to have a grand time in Turin playing for one of the biggest clubs in Europe. And I was of the opinion, so it's my opinion, that's all, that he is, I can consider him like an Arsenal legend, because he's done things which will live with me for the rest of my life. The 2014 FA Cup final winner, the 2017 FA Cup final winner, the landing Van Persie on his arse incident, which I think everybody should be able to get behind, the not shaking Piers Morgan's hand after Piers Morgan was going to be, or had been, a complete wanker to him, as he is to most people, and Ramsey, in typically understated fashion, said, "I don't think I want to do that," which is quite brilliant.
Yeah.
But the whole concept of, like, what is and what isn't a legend sparks all this great debate, doesn't it, about, well, no, I mean, he's not Thierry Henry, he's not Dennis Bergkamp, but that's not the issue. It's clearly a personal thing. Like, when I was growing up, Alan Sunderland was a legend for scoring the winner in an FA Cup final in 1979, and he scored a lot of goals for Arsenal, but it was that one moment in 1979 that made him a legend in my eyes, and I don't see why Ramsey couldn't be a legend for lots of people, and nobody's saying, just because I think that or you think that, you also have to think it. You know, we can all just go about these things thinking what we want.
Yeah, it's quite a subjective thing, isn't it? It's a bit like the World Cup class tag, like, how do you define who and what is world class, and in one respect, yes, it's entirely subjective and it's driven by emotion and things that you can't really quantify. A lot of it, I think, kind of comes out in the wash in the years that follow, so I don't think you really find out until a little while after a player's left. And I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, and the example I used was Mark Overmars, who was a brilliant, brilliant player for Arsenal, who scored iconic goals. You know, the one at Old Trafford, the cup final, the day we win the league against Everton, he scores two. He made the most significant contribution during that double season. He was amazing. But because he was replaced by Robert Pires, he's barely talked about. So how you're replaced is one thing.
And how you leave, which wasn't, the greatest either. Same with Petit, who made an amazing contribution in that double season, but the way he left and the way he behaved in the 6 to 9 months before he left, coloured his status for me, certainly.
Absolutely, and Ramsey's setting himself up well on that score because he's gone abroad, because he's conducted himself very well. And that will kind of play favourably with people because, Cesc Fabregas, for example, probably isn't an Arsenal legend because there are too many people who still feel, some animosity about the way he left. So, like, because, in one respect, it is subjective. Like, I loved Bakary Sagna, loved Wojciech Szczesny.
Yeah.
I loved Alex Hleb personally. he was a player who divided opinion, but I absolutely loved him.
Sure.
But I know those players aren't Arsenal legends, even if I personally consider them that way. I understand that in the pantheon of whole Arsenal support, nobody's going to be building any statues for them or anything, but I think to get that kind of objective who is a legend type thing, I think a lot of it depends on the kind of era they play in as well. Brady was definitely an Arsenal legend, but his legend, I think, is almost amplified by the fact that he played in such a bad era where there were so few good players and he was the one.
Yeah, he was miles and miles above everybody else.
Exactly, and we didn't really replace him either, so he very much stayed a legend, and he went abroad, so people kind of, that kind of affection and that longing stayed. So a lot of these things with Ramsey, a lot of those things that are just completely out of his hands. But what I will say is I think there are players who have done less for Arsenal who would probably be considered legends. And I think in a few years, particularly like if we do have maybe a bit of a drift for the next few years and we're not in the Champions League, I think that people will certainly look back very, very favourably on Aaron Ramsey. And I think he's in the conversation, put it that way, for legend sure. status.
I think even for the Piers Morgan thing alone, he should be a legend. I remember speaking to somebody who had to do a thing with Piers Morgan a couple of years back, and I asked what was it like, and they said, "Imagine how bad you think it could be. It's worse." So
I don't doubt that's true.
No, I don't either. All right, Tim, look, we better leave it there. Thanks for your time this evening, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
My pleasure as always.
Thank you very much indeed to Tim. You can find him on Twitter at Stilberto, and of course you can read his column on Arsblog every week on arsblog.com, and you will find him writing about the Arsenal women's team on Arsblog News as well. This weekend, we don't have a game. So this last little bit where we might preview the game coming up at the weekend, well, there isn't a game to preview. So all I'm going to do right now is just say thank you for listening, as always. It hasn't necessarily been the most cheery podcast we've ever put together, but when you lose 1-0 to Bate Borisov, what can you expect? They do say, though, that a problem shared is a problem halved. And if, by listening to this podcast, we've cut Arsenal's problems in half somehow, then that can only be a good thing. So, James and I will be here on Monday. We will be recording an Arscast Extra for you. If you would like to give us a rating or review on iTunes, thank you very much indeed. That will be greatly appreciated. You don't have to, though. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. We can't make you do it. You just do whatever you feel like doing. It's that kind of weekend. We've just lost to a shit team. Do whatever you like. It's fine with me. But as I said, I do thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Sky Sports News. Coming up a bit later on, Mark Hughes and Alan Pardew on the nude calendar that they hope is going to get them another Premier League job. First, though, bad news for Arsenal fans. After a weekend of team bonding at Unai Emery's house, every single player is down with food poisoning except for Mesut Ozil. It's believed a dodgy paella is to blame, and the Gunners face a crisis heading into this weekend's game. And we've got some breaking news here from the Arsenal training ground. Mesut Ozil has been left out of the Arsenal squad this weekend by Unai Emery. The Spaniard said he much prefers to focus on the players who are going to play, even though he doesn't have any players who can play. Stick with us here on Sky News for the latest. Coming up next, though, Sam Allardyce is in studio to tell us why he thinks Brexit means he should be able to hunt foreign players for sport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.